Good morning. This is the Leatherneck Magazine's Andrew Lubin. Today we're talking with Brigadier General Paul Kennedy, 3rd Marine Expeditionary Brigade Commanding General and overall commander of the recently concluded exercise San Young 14. General, thanks for taking the time to talk with us today.
It's my pleasure.
Good. General, you commanded San Young 14. You were the CG, 14,100 Marines, American Navy, Korean Marines, Navy, and some Australians. How did it all fit together?
Andrew, I think is interesting is that the exercise was a dual commanded exercise by CTF 76, which is a Navy one star Admiral Hugh Weatherald, who is my partner for the exercise, and we basically did everything lockstep from the initial planning all the way through the execution. And I just want to make sure that your listening audience is clear that the Navy Marine Corps team operating as an amphibious task force executed this very complex and not first of its kind, but largest of its kind in many years exercise. So CTF 76 definitely deserves props for having participated in the exercise. And it was, I would say, a smashing success, both in terms of the exercise objectives, the relationships that we developed with the United States Navy at this level. They hadn't really been worked out in many years. And then more importantly, the relationships that we furthered with the Republic of Korean Marine Corps, the Republic of Korean Navy, and we had some Australian partners as well.
General, the object of the exercise was forceful entry, I guess, on a joint allied basis. Were the Koreans parallel with you, working with you? How did everybody fit together in this?
Well, one of the possible operations that we would conduct with our Republic of Korean partners is a forcible amphibious entry. They practice this, the ROC Marine Corps practices this as often as we do, and they're very adept at battalion-sized landing team scaled operations. So working with them was easy. Perhaps of all the Marine Corps that we work with, they show the most similarities in how they plan an operation, how they train towards an operation, and then in execution. So aboard the USS Bonhomme Richard, we actually had a combined staff with a ROC one-star, Brigadier General Cho, and we set up a combined operations center, a combined a side-by-side intelligence center, because obviously there are U.S. secret firewalls that we can't get beyond. We had a combined fire section. We did combined logistics. And so General Cho and I operated as a team for the duration of the exercise. Likewise, Admiral Weatherald operated with his counterpart, Rear Admiral Chun. So this was a exercise, and I would say somewhat tongue-in-cheek, an experiment in joint and combined Navy Marine Corps operations, and I think it was a great success.
The Marine Navy Blue Green team is clearly the leader in the world in that field. How do the Koreans compare to us?
The Koreans compare favorably. They don't have as many ships as we have. They contributed a great number of ships for the exercise. They are now developing a fairly robust amphibious fleet. The design of their ships is a little bit different. They are newer ships. They're outstanding platforms to conduct amphibious operations at the across the entire range of military operations. Their techniques are similar to ours. I mean, that's the whole purpose of having an alliance and ensuring that there's interoperability. That the Koreans, they do have some of their own methodologies, but by and large, they're completely dovetailed into the way we do business. So I would say that the Korean blue-green team is a viable and formidable capability for the government.
with your amphibious landing ship, the Docto, I believe it's pronounced, is a landing ship helicopter, about half the size of our big decks. And they've got they've got AAVs, they've got LCACs. So really, so you're saying they can do what we do, so they can, if there's a forceful entry situation, then they can turn around and pick up the pack and do very well then.
Absolutely. And so, like I said, what we add is capacity. They have incredible capabilities. They're very professional. They're, you know, first-rate amphibious Navy Marine Corps. What the U.S. partnership does is give them additional capabilities. So, capacity. So if they've got the Docto and a series of LSTs, kind of the old landing ship tank that the U.S. Navy once had, we come with additional numbers to flesh out a fully formed combined force. And so the Docto is a beautiful ship. It's completely capable. We are running helicopter operations daily off the Docto. They're putting, as you alluded to, they're putting their version of an LCAC out the back end. They did a very complex Amtrak landing at what we called White Beach down in Tuxaw Cree. So it was a first-rate, almost unique capability that the Koreans possess.
How did the Australians fit in? They only sent 130 this time. Where were they? With you, or with the Koreans?
Well, we had them with us as part of the combined force. Australian soldiers, they don't have a Marine Corps. The Australians are developing amphibious capability. Really, it's been pushed into high gear. We started with an exercise last summer called Talisman Sabre, which was with their deployable joint force headquarters. It was an amphibious in nature. We've continued those discussions about how they can build that capability, and now we're adding capacity to that. This company that came out participated side-by-side within Regimental Landing Team 31, commanded by Colonel John Myrna, who's also dual-hatted as the commanding officer of the 31st MEU, and he employed them according to their capabilities. And so what I observed of them was them training within a urban combat scenario, and their techniques look very similar to ours. And so I have full confidence that the Australian military is proceeding apace with their own development of amphibious forces.
Yeah, because they've got their first big deck, the Canberra, which I guess is on her sea trials as we speak. Have you had the opportunity to go down and visit her yet?
No, I have not, but I look forward to that opportunity. And like I said, we're participating in talks with several within the region, with several of our partners about this amphibious capability. And so the Australians are just one of about a half dozen that we are actively engaged with, making sure that we have similar techniques and procedures and that we have full interoperability should we have to work together. And we did work together with an amphibious task force during Typhoon Hainan. The joint task force that the Australians appointed were fellows that we had just worked with a few months previous down in Talisman Sabre. So it's interesting to see folks that we train with then participate in real-world crisis response.
Well, much of the value of the MEUs has been, especially in Asia, has been HADR the past the past dozens of years. Do the Koreans train for HADR also, or are they mostly a forceful entry?
The Koreans do train for HADR. As a matter of fact, they have a long-standing commitment down in the Philippines, in the very region that we were deployed to, down in the island of Leyte. They have an engineer battalion that is helping in the recovery of the city of Tacloban. So the Koreans are extremely adept. They've proven to be great partners. During the typhoon and the recovery down in the Philippines, their C-130s were flying. Their engineers were down there pushing dirt. They did not send the Docto because that's probably a bit out of theater for them, but they flew in forces to assist in the recovery after the typhoon.
So much of the value of these exercises is the small unit leadership, our corporals, lance corporals, and sergeants working with their counterparts and from other countries. Did you get a chance to view any of them, or were you unfortunately stuck on the Bonhomme Richard?
No, I got off the ship as often as I could, and I did observe our small units training. You know, for many folks, the opportunity to train in Korea is something they've been looking forward to for months. And for a rifle company that is typically assigned here to Okinawa, it's almost a, you know, once in a deployment opportunity to get over there to Korea and conduct the type of operations that we've become very adept at over the last 10 or 12 years. So we saw live fire opportunities, we saw non-live fire field training exercises going on. Our squad leaders are second to none. Sergeants and corporals were taking charge, and they were doing things that I remember doing as a lieutenant in those very same training areas 30 years ago. So it was a great opportunity for our Marines to exercise across the range of military operations, not just conducting MEU type special missions, but in this case they were conducting conventional operations ashore in the southern part of Korea.
A few weeks ago, when the exercise was just kicking off, we had a chance to interview the CEO of the HIMARS unit. Was talking about how his Marines and the Korean Marines were out doing HIMARS together. Were you able to view any infantry, any other units working as Koreans and Marines together compared to separately?
Well, the HIMARS training was kind of a first of its kind for us here, and we sequenced that. The live fire shoot into some ranges that were north of where we were training, because this is kind of a unique capability that we're depending upon in the advent of a high end fight. Likewise, we brought tanks in from the reserves, and they did a live fire shoot as well. According to the Navy, it was a first of its kind where they were actually craning tanks aboard the LSD to then subsequently land them across the beaches by LCU and by LCAC. So we were training a lot of unique capabilities that hadn't been showcased in many years or perhaps at all on the Korean Peninsula.
You know, I don't think we've seen pictures of tanks being winched off and on since probably the Korean days of Korea back in the 1950s. That had to be something to see.
I spoke to a chief bosun's mate who had been doing that sort of work for 25 years, and he thought it was the first time he had ever seen a 72-ton tank being craned into the well deck of a Navy ship.
I would imagine. I would certainly imagine. General, where's the next step with 3rd Med and joint operations? You finished with the Koreans, with the Australians. What's coming up?
Our work never ends. So we have exercise opportunities across about 24 countries out here in Asia Pacific. We have trained with partners in the Philippines, with the Japanese. We've gone as far as Nepal to work through various types of operations, not just operating at the low end with an HADR, but we're also practicing, as we did with Sangyong, at the high end of military operations. So these partners are vital. They are eager to train with us. They have great capabilities. They are the true experts at how you would fight and deploy within Asia-Pacific region. And so this is a nonstop roller coaster ride of training opportunities. And occasionally we get called out as a contingency force to respond to something like an HEDR down in the Philippines. So our work never ends out here in Okinawa.
Sure. It sounds the more we continue this podcast series, the more we talk to people like yourself, Colonel Marta, who we spoke to a few times, the Marines down in Darwin, amphibious operations clearly seems to be one of the highlights of American foreign policy, from forcible entry to NEO to HADR to, you know, to building schools on a port visit. Are we wrong in this, or is this truly something that the Marine Corps excels at and will continue to lead the way in?
Well, we obviously excel at amphibious operations. This is something that's in our DNA as Marines. We just know how to operate from ships to project power ashore or to conduct operations ashore. The amphibious fleet that's out here in Japan is, as General Amos has called it, the Swiss Army knife of the Department of Defense. The other partner nations here in the Pacific see that as perhaps the most viable form of military operation, that it's difficult to get basing rights, it's difficult to establish a long-term presence in some of the places that they know they're going to have to operate, and so you have to get there by the most viable means, which is by the sea. That's how big, heavy things are lifted, is by ship. So we've got about a half dozen active amphibious partners that we are working either through them developing for the first time that sort of organization or in fine-tuning that which has existed for a number of years. So amphibious operations are how you operate in the Pacific, is the bottom line.
Great. General, thank you for the time today. This has been very very helpful, very enlightening. This is WeatherNet Magazine's Andrew Lubin. Hey, we've been talking with Brigadier General Paul Kennedy, CG of 3rd MIB. So thank you for the time.
It's my pleasure. Thank you, Andrew.